It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's International Week. So, Jules, what are we going to do? We're going to not just talk about internationals,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Have a special guest.
We have a special guest like we did on Monday. And that special guest is Nedim Onuwa. Nedim, welcome aboard. For those who haven't tracked his career as meticulously as others might have, you, at the end of your career here in England, you started at Manchester City. You went to QPR. And then you spent 2 years in MLS, not just in MLS, mm-hmm. but in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And then you come back here in the middle of a pandemic. Now, I just need to know, first of all, did you plan on coming back during a freaking lockdown? And secondly, what's different?
Well, everything that you've said there is true. And it sounds crazy, but most of it was planned. So my career in England came to an end through choice because I had the opportunity to stay, but I wanted to go and experience something different. I think for the years which I was playing, I was a bit different to, say, the normal footballer in England, because I understood that the English league was, say, the most lucrative, the most watched, and so on. But I would spend most of my time watching the foreign leagues. That's where I'm seeing people like you, Gab. That's where I'm seeing people like you, Jules. So I...
You remember Jules and I from our playing days, don't you?
Yeah.
You grew up watching us.
You were like the Colin York of, you know, the early 90s, but... I wanted to experience something different because I valued sort of different cultures. Like whenever I was free, traveling the world was something which my wife and I, we love to do. So when the opportunity came to try and see something different, you know, we decided to take it and go and move to the USA. For those 2 years, they were great 2 years, but then obviously sort of culminated in a pandemic occurring. But the plan was to be over there for that period of time, whether it went well or whether it went badly. The plan was to always stop and to come back to England because that's where ultimately our friends and our family are. So we came back to a lockdown that's very different to the lockdown we had in Utah. But the fact is, you know, we were seeing our friends and family for the first time in, say, a year, 2 years. And it was good to be back. Obviously, football and life is in a different place, but it still feels familiar. The moment you arrive at the airport, you get in your car, I could drive. You know where to go. You know the feel, that buzz, that excitement. Like, that's there, even though I used to call Utah my home. So yeah, I'm back, and you know, everybody, not myself only, everyone's adjusting to the new normal for now, hoping that better times are ahead.
Now, you grew up in, you're from Manchester, you grew up there, and
yeah.
I checked before we started this.
Wikipedia.
Exactly. You joined Manchester City before the Sheikh, before Abu Dhabi. And you were there you came through the ranks, and you were there on that trajectory when they started building everything and talking about everything. Did you expect that it would reach this level, with this level of success? In other words, I guess what I'm driving at is, how transformative has it been? Or is Manchester still a city where red looks down on blue?
Well, I think that's a very, very good question. I think ultimately the success that Manchester United had from the start of the Premier League era kind of makes them, overall, in my opinion, they're the bigger club. Globally, they're the bigger club because they found more success and they have more supporters outside of that. But City itself, they're a well-supported club within Manchester and within the UK. And it's not just fans who've been there for great times, because so I joined in 95, I think. And it was only 2-3 years later, they were in Division 3, and they were still getting 30,000 fans at Main Road at the time. So that type of support for that type of club, you know, that's special. Obviously, decades earlier, they were winning trophies and so on, but that was special. So then as time passed, and say the ownership comes in, there was still, I think for anybody who experienced, say, having to just about being promoted in the playoff final, against the Gillingham at Wembley in Division 2, if you have that in your mind, when somebody comes in and says everything's going to be great now, you have the doubts, because how can it be great when only a few years previous we were down there? So I was one of the players and people who were in there. It was exciting. But then when someone says we're going to try and win the league, we're going to try and win the cup, we're going to try and win the Champions League, going to try and compete, you're like, so who are we now? Are we Manchester United? It didn't quite feel real. Especially because in that time you had players like, I think like Kaká turned down the club because he said it's not good enough, it's not big enough, and so on. But in time, to give credit to the ownership, and obviously City were very lucky that the ownership came in at that time, they developed the community side of things in the club. They developed the training ground, the stadium, the overall area, the mentality, the staff. And they're now built to be a team which hopefully will be sustained for a very long time. Sorry, a club that will be sustained for a very long time. And as well as that, everybody is of a sort of positive, sort of exceptional minded sort of mentality in terms of what they want to achieve, whether you're the person that's cleaning the floor or the person that's playing the number nine. The whole club itself has been transformed. And even though Manchester United are still, you know, one of the biggest and best supported teams in the world, City are drawing in fans at a greater rate now because of what they're doing. And who's to say that in, say, 5-10 years, maybe they will be the bigger team in Manchester. But for now, if it's going to be purely based off success, then City have had more of the recent stuff, but United have the history. But it's a good battle, and it's good to see that from when I was playing, City were always underdogs. But now Manchester United enter those games hoping to get a result. And that blows my mind when I see how far City have gone.
Gab, you know, as is Nathan's debut on our show, you know, when you join a new club or the national team or whatever, you have to do your initiation song, right? You know, you stand up on your chair at dinner usually and you have to sing a song, and so I think,
or a piece of music on his bass guitar,
because it's his debut, you know, I think we are owed a song. You know, what was your initiation song when you went to Utah or
I think the last one I did was Under the Bridge by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Ah, good choice.
Ooh. Mm. So is this a real initiation?
Nah, you don't have
That's
to.
What I need to know.
You don't have to.
He would be very disappointed. He wants to.
Yeah, I think he wants to. He wants to show off.
Nobody wants to. Nobody wants to. But nobody wants to be the guy that let people down. So you tell me what you need.
We've got millions of people, you know, listening to this.
We are going worldwide. This is your chance, and I believe there's a bass guitar within reach.
Maybe just keep it to singing.
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend is the city I live in, the city of angels. I've forgotten the words, so I'll just sing along.
Oh my God.
Seriously.
Thank you.
The word versatile and multi-talented gets thrown around way too much, but now we know.
You're a much better singer than pundit, to be fair, so that was really impressive.
All that shows is I've got spine. That's the big thing. I have spine. I appreciate the audience. I apologize for the sound, but at least I tried.
Amazing. Right,
not the easiest transition now, but I want to go back to what you said before about when you have a club that's grown as much as City has and as Chelsea, and we at ESPN, we are the worldwide leader, so we speak to fans globally, you're very aware of, I don't want to say it's a disconnect because, you know, every club wants new fans, but those City fans that, you know, either have ties to the club or whatever, or who've been fans throughout, sort of pre-Taxon, and the new ones that have come on board, and this, like I said, this applies to Chelsea. It applies to other clubs too.
PSG as well,
right? Is there a sense that, you know, when things go bad, those guys are the first ones to say, "Oh, well, maybe we should sack Cheeky or Pep or whatever," because, you know, we haven't won every game now. And the other ones are like, "No, let's just be glad that, you know, we're still on the left hand side of the table when we watch Match of the Day." I mean,
yeah.
Do you sense that?
I think that's a good question. And I think overall, if we look at it, every fan base ultimately has different groups of fans within it. They have the ones who are really aware of what's going on the field and the ones who just expect results. You know, I think the more you sort of understand the game of football and understand it outside of just your team itself, then I think, you know, you can be more level-headed with your thought process. Because at the start of every season, for example, in the Premier League, every club says, right, we're going to work really hard this year. We're all going to stay up, going to have a great season. But every single year, three teams go down. That's the inevitability of what football is. But some fans, they think that they can just work hard, or players think they can work hard and everything will be okay. No, not really. That's not the understanding of football itself. And with that fan base there, I think you'll always have casual fans who will be there when things are going well. And for as much as they may not stay forever, I think if you can develop that loyal fan base who understand what the club actually is and understand the game of football, then I think that's ultimately the success. And the things on top, yes, they add value, but they don't define a football club. I think if those people, if those ones that will come when they're winning but disappear when they're losing, if they become the foundation of a football club, then I think ultimately you'll struggle. But with City, and I think to a certain extent with Chelsea as well, and other teams who have been bought out, the foundation hasn't been alienated, and I think it has grown. And I think it's grown because the club, essentially, to talk to City specifically, they've tried to keep the identity of it being a family club. So people buy into that as well as the football. And obviously some of the football that they have at the moment is as good as you'll see or you've probably seen in your lifetime, but it's not the deciding factor as to whether lots of that fan base stay or go. I think they'd be more concerned about if there was something where the owner disrespects the City of Manchester as opposed to Pep Guardiola loses 3 games in a row. And, you know, you appreciate every fan, you appreciate everything. But for me, as an ex-player, I think you appreciate more so the people that really understand the game. And I think those numbers are increasing. And as a consequence, I think it's in good hands.
You know what gets me going lately is the quadruple. Because... And because, as we said, the club has been building and building, transformed everything. This is a great team in this pandemic. So this is a big chance, I think, to win the quadruple. I don't understand why this is a taboo. Why you can't talk about quadruple? Why Pep is coming up with lines like, it's utopia. No. What's utopia is that me and Gab moving to the moon tomorrow to live there with our family. That's utopia. Winning the quadruple is not utopia. It's very hard, yeah, of course, and they might not do it. It's more likely that they don't than they do.
Right. First of all, about moving to the moon, just to be clear, I went to university with Elon Musk, okay?
Yeah, I know.
So, I wouldn't call it utopia.
It still is.
One day, maybe not tomorrow.
More than winning the quadruple for City this year.
Probably,
with 25 wins in the last 26 games. Is this superstition? Yeah. Or one, do you think they can do it? And I think the answer should be yes. Is it superstition that you footballers don't want to jinx anything? So you say, no, we can't do it. But inside of you, you actually really believe that you can and that you might. And is there a lack of ambition not even to say it?
Well, again, these are great questions. This is why I'm very privileged to be on this show. Very privileged. So there are so many layers to it. The first one for me is that there are some players who do believe in jinxing things, so they will never vocalize it. But to counteract that, every game for Man City, when they go out on the field, between now and the end of the season, every game that Man City play, they will essentially be favorites to win the game. Whether that's against Bayern Munich or against Brighton at this moment in time.
Yeah.
So for them, the expectation is to go and win. And the players have that belief. They don't go out there against anybody and believe that they are the underdogs for a game. So the psychology of a quadruple exists because they're winning games. And it just so happens they've got enough games left in the season right now to win 4 trophies.
Yeah.
So they won't vocalize that, but that's what they're playing for because they don't play to lose games. They don't play to draw games. They play to win everything. But then the other side of it, because this is a big thing for me as well as an ex-player, sometimes you don't want to say what your objectives are when other people stand in your way because it seeks to become inspiration for the opposition. If you say, yes, we're going for the quadruple, yes, we're going to do this, then what does it look like for the people who you have to face in the next game? Like and it's at the end of the day, it's football. We can have favorites, but let's be clear, it's still a game of football. And in the same way that City might be heavy favorites, for example, for the League Cup, Jose Mourinho and Spurs can have one good day and they could walk away with a trophy.
Yeah.
Like if City are close to perfect or they limit their mistakes, I don't think anybody beats them. But how often does that happen in professional football where teams have games like that? And the answer is not very often, unless the opposition make it easy for them. So it's almost like having a respect for the opposition that you have ahead of you, because the moment you start to sound like this is all you care about, as I say, it gives the opposition just that little bit more of a boost. And I think they do have ambition, because to be at Manchester City with Pep Guardiola, to have the ownership that they have, I doubt they'll go into any season and say, well, let's just try and win this one thing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the squad that they have. They wouldn't have the manager that they have. And they wouldn't invest in the resources and the things around them to make everything possible, from, say, the hotel rooms that they stay in to the food that they eat. They're geared towards trying to win as many games, if not every game, in a season. So the belief is obviously there. Pep knows it's there. But I think he's had the right sort of mentality over the past 3-4 months, because every time you ask him, he says one game at a time, one game at a time. But I tell you what, if they had four games to go between the end of the season, which would lead to the quadruple, he would still tick it off one game at a time.
Yeah.
Because every game in itself matters if you want to try and achieve those goals. And I think they're capable of doing it. Whether or not they will, I don't know. For me, I probably doubt it because of the fact that, you know, they have to almost remain perfect between now and the end of the season. And now you're coming up against slightly tougher opposition and there's more on the line. So, yeah, it's going to be tough, but they're favoured to do so. I think they deserve to be favoured to do so. I'd love to see it happen, but I'm not 100% sure about it just now.
I'm going to foreshadow something that we're talking about later in quick hits, and I don't expect you to get too specific unless you want to, but Kevin De Bruyne and Raheem Sterling are both out of contract in the summer of 2023. There's full of media reports about them, you know, rightfully going and asking about a new contract, getting a healthy pay rise, which they, you know, they deserve in the sense that they've done well. But I look at the dynamic of the City team, and compared to other great teams, this really is a team in the sense that there's very few City players where you say, oh, they have to hang on to him. You know, this isn't like Bayern and Lewandowski or Barcelona with Messi. City can go and talk to De Bruyne and Sterling and say, thank you for everything you've done. We've paid you well. We think you're worth this much. If you don't take it, it's fine. The sun's going to rise tomorrow. Nobody has that bargaining power. We thought Aguero might. We thought De Bruyne might. And then he misses a whole season. And they still beat everybody. We don't see Aguero at all this year. And they I mean, from a club perspective, this is an absolute luxury, right?
Yes. 100%. I think for most teams, as we've kind of seen in Liverpool and so on, when you miss key players, the team can tend to unravel. But when City were playing without Sergio Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne, who were two of the best players in the club's history, they proceeded to win every game in that spell. And it wasn't due to the talented individuals which they have. It was due to the collective performance of everybody. And that, I think, is why, you know, they're in this look, this position of luxury where a Kevin De Bruyne coming into your team gives you a big boost, but a Kevin De Bruyne out of your team isn't a massive loss. They have an ability to rotate, because I think with Pep and with his coaching staff and so on, he's got the team understanding exactly what their roles are, and they perform them almost perfectly most of the time. So when Kevin De Bruyne leaves the team, the person coming in isn't being asked to be Kevin De Bruyne. He's being asked to play the 10 in this system. And whoever comes in to do that is capable of doing so. So in some ways, it makes it harder for a De Bruyne or a Sterling, because now it's a team not based on individuals. Like you say, when you look at Messi and so on in those places, who are basically having teams built around them. But I'd ask the question, does Kevin De Bruyne want to stay at Man City? Does Raheem Sterling want to stay at Man City? Because I'm sure Man City will want them to stay. But if they believe that there's going to be a case of money or whatever, then yeah, you could go somewhere else. But how many places, especially in England right now, have the same level of ambition that Man City actually do? And I've answered probably no one. So then you look around Europe, how many teams have that level of ambition? And you start looking at maybe one or two. But are those one or two teams looking to invest in players like Sterling, like De Bruyne? And how much would it cost for them to do so? So I think sometimes, for me, you know, the players, they will get more money. The Sheikh has more money, and he values those two players greatly, same way Pep does, which is why they play all the time. But I think if they show a desire to want to stay, then they can be part of something which at the moment feels incredible. And provided Pep's still there and they still have the same mentality in 2-3 years' time, you ask yourself the question, why would you want to leave?
You know, because your debut is pretty good, I suspect you would come back on the show. But if you were not too familiar with it... there's a lot of things that Gab hates, but one of them being giving a big contract to a player that is already 30 or on the verge of being 30. So for Raheem, that's no problem. But for De Bruyne, Gab would go mad if very soon City says he signed a new 5-year deal or 4-year deal, which would then take him into his 34 or 35, because Gab thinks that at that age, you have to be really careful, like we saw with Arsenal and Aubameyang, or plenty of other clubs do it, on what you give to who and at what age. Are you more with Gab on that, or are you more with me, who thinks that someone like De Bruyne, whether he's 29 or 30 or 31, 32, he still has easily a good 3-4 years ahead of him. So given the contract.
It depends, Gabby. If you're talking, are you talking about money invested or the contract length? Which one is more important to you?
Completely contract length. I mean, what I would do with De Bruyne, I mean, he's going to be 31 when his contract expires. I might give him a 2-year deal or even a 1-year deal and say, listen, Kevin, you have a great thing going on here. We'll give you a ton of money for another year, and then we'll have a conversation at the end of the year. And that way, if you want to go back to Belgium, if you want to stick around, if you're not happy, we've been fair to you all these years. We've given you a ton of money. We like you here. You're valued. I don't think footballers are motivated solely by money. And that's why I think if Arsenal had
5 years of security.
Security for what?
For everything.
He could build his house out of dollar bills and burn it all down every day for the rest of his life.
It doesn't matter. If you give him just 1 year. If you give him 1 year, so like, well, how much are you trusting me just for 1 year? What is that? I'm not a squad member. I'm Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, I would take that approach. I like to think that Dennis Bergkamp worked for Arsenal and Dennis Bergkamp years ago. I'm wondering, can you tell us, like, you as a footballer, if you can imagine you were Kevin De Bruyne, you had already made all this money, and you genuinely enjoyed playing there, once you get into your 30s, would you need a 3-4-5 year commitment, or would you be cool with, I just want to be a part of it and be paid well for it?
I think it's a tough position to be in, and for anyone listening, no, I'm not going to say I understand what Kevin De Bruyne will be thinking. Let me separate that before all the comments go crazy. But as you get older, I think there's a level of understanding about security in terms of years, because you seek them, because no years are guaranteed. As you've mentioned, after 30, there's nothing guaranteed. You drift into, you can see the end of your career, whereas in your 20s, all you can think about is, say, what you're doing in that moment or the start of your career. So there is a sense of awareness about that. And I think it ultimately depend on if De Bruyne is happy there or what his ambitions are. Does he have an ambition to go and play in another league? Does he have an ambition to go and play for another club? Because when you look at, say, some players, if you are, say, maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but if you're a French national and you're doing really well for City, but your dream is to always play for PSG, then, like, you'd be thinking, well, I'm kind of itching. I'd like to do that at some point. But if you don't have those sort of ambitions to play elsewhere, then it fits great. But then, Gab, I'll ask you this question then, and I think this might sit with you well as well, Jules, is if his contract is up in 2 years' time from now, how about if he signed a new deal this summer that gave 2 years onto the end of the next deal? So it's technically a 4-year deal, which he signs now. So he gets more money for those 4 years. But then also the security only takes him to 33, as opposed to taking him to a 4-year deal from after he turns 31. Is that something you prefer?
Completely. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not comfortable with the idea. And obviously I view this, as you know, I'm obsessed with financial fair play and whatever, and there's a lot of cynicism, and but let's put that to one side. But I think ultimately it's important you have to balance books, and the club will still be there once De Bruyne is gone. But
yeah,
I genuinely think, obviously some footballers view big wages, and you'll know this, in contracts as a way of keeping score, as a way of being appreciated by the club, right? Others say, screw this. I got to play football for 10, 15 years at the highest level. I made a ton of money. I only have X amount of time left. I want to be where I'm happy. And however I define happiness, you know, for Vincent Kompany, he could have stuck around and won more stuff. You know, happiness was to go back home and start a new career. For somebody else, it might be, for Dennis Bergkamp, it was continually signing those 1-year contracts, right?
Yeah.
I think footballers, or some footballers, intelligent footballers you want to keep around, for me, they view it a little bit differently, right? If you're in a great spot and you can win things and the money's the same, would you not bet on yourself for another year if you're in your 30s and you've already attained that security?
Yeah, I think you could do and you would do, but there's also the side of football where at some point the loyalty you show might count for nothing if they decide to go in a different direction. That is ultimately the problem, which is why I think once you get into your 30s, the quest for security, and for someone like Kevin De Bruyne, it's not financial security. It could be security in terms of, like, being, knowing that you're going to be playing or being in a place for a period of time. And that is ultimately, I think, the sort of nuance that comes with these type of contract negotiations, because again, like, what type of person is he? Is he somebody that believes this, the only security he needs is to be seen years on the table and he's playing for the club? Or is he somebody who's more about ego and has to be the number one paid player to know that he's of value? You know, and I think ultimately for that, if City decide and gauge which player he is, that'll probably decide how long he signs for. Because if he's somebody that just wants to be there, then the structure of the deal might be more beneficial to both parties if he's going to be at the club past 31, 32, 33. But if it's just about a status thing, then you'll probably see the club try and move him on at some point. Because at the end of the day, the club, they've done, for the great players that they've had across the years, one thing which they've done really well recently is they've brought in replacements for the older players, and they seem to be hitting the ground running. So for as good as a Kevin De Bruyne is, he's not the most important player at Manchester City anymore, because the collective far outweighs any individual, which is why some games you'll see two number nines on the bench, even though Kevin De Bruyne is out and even though whatever's out, and they'll just play and they'll find a way. And that way is usually quite an elite way. So they're in a good spot. And I think it will test out what Kevin De Bruyne's motivations are when contract negotiation time comes.
You know what? You should do, I don't know if you've taken your agent's exam yet, but you know, in case you were wanting an alternate career,
nope.
You know,
we
could connect you with Kia. You know, you could go work for him. You know,
listen, it's an honor coming on after Kia Jurabchin, to be honest. But the fact of the matter is, agency stuff just isn't for me. I think it's a very interesting field, but I don't think my personality would feel comfortable within that area, if you know what I mean.
I hear you. I want to ask you something about playing football. You said you watched a lot of foreign football when you were playing. And one point Jules and I have made many times is that what I find interesting about Pep Guardiola is that his Barcelona team and his Bayern team, and to a fair degree, his first two City sides, don't play the same football that they play now.
Yeah.
So there's been a very clear, evolution or shift. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because to me, this is a sign of, it's a sign of intelligence and ability that you can change and keep winning. And he gets to pick his own player. So it's not like a change that's forced upon him because all of a sudden, you know, you get the best out of the players you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think... So for anybody who's going to be upset again, I do have a sense of bias towards Pep Guardiola, because that Barcelona team that you speak of, that's one of my favorites of all time. And then what he did at Bayern Munich, I really enjoyed watching that as well. And just him as a person, I enjoyed watching him play. So yeah, there's going to be a sense of bias here. I apologize. But I think he's good at understanding the fact that the game changes. I think for some managers, they have their style and they want to continue with it. And just want to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. When it's going well, great. If it's going badly, I'm going to continue doing this. But we've seen with some of those managers, their stock starts to fall. And for someone like Pep to have done it in three different leagues, where each league plays its own slightly different brand of football, you know, that's impressive. And obviously from the recruitment side, he's been very fortunate in the fact that he's had money to spend. He's managed three of the biggest clubs in the world right now. But I think he understands how to try and get the best out of those players and how to go up against opposition. Because it was only the start of this season where City were struggling and he made a change. But then you look at in this moment, someone like a Jurgen Klopp, where they were struggling, but they still try and do things the same way, but with slightly different personnel, and it doesn't seem to be working. But I think that ability to adapt, whereas in the past for Pep, I think especially in the Champions League, people would level the criticism that he overthinks things, he tweaks too much and so on. But now he's like tweaking just the right things. He's going on a game-to-game basis with a foundation, but might just adjust this. And when you hear him speak, he says, going into every game, we know what we're good at, but we'll see what the opposition are good at and see how we can stop them. And it sounds like he's just talking, but then I watched them against Spurs, and every time they lost the ball, three, four, five players would swarm onto a midfielder for Spurs to stop the quick counter-attack. I watched them against Wolves. Every time Troy got the ball, three, four players would come and swarm against him and stop him from being able to get ahead of steam and try and maybe create something. And that's an understanding of the opposition, whilst also understanding your own team in terms of how you want to play. And when you have a manager who's that attentive with players who are ultimately, you know, very, very intelligent and can take on instruction very well, you know, it's a perfect recipe. But then I think other managers, if they had the same players, he'll still probably persist and, you know, be bogged down in playing in a particular style. But I think he adapts it. And then you look at City now again, to go back to them, being in England, it's great that you can play, but can you defend set pieces? Can you defend 1v1? Can you do this? And that's what he's building his team off now. He's building his team off centre-backs, and maybe it's three centre-backs, one holding midfielder, all got good size, physicality, want to go for headers, win duels. Like, that's not Pep Guardiola. Or rather, that is Pep Guardiola. That's what he stands for now. And all the other stuff, it matters to him because that's still his identity. But you understood that if you want to do well in England, you've got to appear to be strong at the back. And if you're not strong at the back, then ultimately you'll end up maybe third, fourth, getting involved in shootouts on a week-to-week basis. But no, Pep can take a 1-0 the same way he'll take a 10-0. Like, he'll probably talk about the 1-0 more so than the 10-0. And that says a lot about him because, as I say, he adapts, he understands. And he can see the cliche is a student of the game, but he is exactly that. And for the years he's managed, we've seen types of football which maybe we hadn't seen before. Because I remember when he was at Bayern Munich, they were playing against Manchester United, I think, in the Champions League. And I remember seeing Ryan Giggs stand out on the left-hand side as Bayern Munich were attacking. But he was just standing there and there was nobody near him because he was expecting to be marking the right back. But then Philipp Lahm was now on the other side of him receiving the ball. So someone as experienced as Ryan Giggs, like, he represents that older style of football. He didn't know where to go because now he's being asked a question which he's never been asked before in his 20-year career. And that ultimately is Pep Guardiola. I think that's why he's successful.
You know, there's three things that you can judge, I think, a manager on. One is the result, and that usually doesn't lie. Two is how much you can improve your players individually. And three, mm-hmm. for me, maybe the most important, and to go back on what Nedim just said, is finding answers or solutions to the problem that you have through a season. It could be over one game or a period of games, whatever, which Pep had issues at the start of the season. I was at the Leicester game at the Etihad where they were just, mm-hmm. one, they were not very good collectively anyway. Two, they were too easily beaten because they gave away stupid penalties, because they were beaten on the counter, because it looked like they were not even sure how Leicester would play, whereas we all knew that Leicester would counter them and cause them problems. And yeah, he managed to find the solutions to all the problems that they had, whether it was a lack of concentration defensively, especially in the box, where it was, you know, maybe they were running too much or trying too hard, where a positional game was probably better for this squad of players. And when you see what he did with Cancelo, what he did with Gundogan, the impact that I think Juan Malillo, the assistant that replaced Mikel Arteta at the club, had on the team, but also on Pep Guardiola, you think, okay, this is how you judge him, with results, improvement of players and solutions found. And he got everything this season.
Yeah, some people might disagree with this point, but before Pep was coming to Man City, or just as he was about to come, I think most people would have said that Raheem Sterling would probably not be Pep Guardiola's type of player. Yet still we're here today, and Raheem Sterling has played more games for Pep Guardiola than any other player in Guardiola's history as a manager. And Raheem Sterling is a better player now than he was when Pep Guardiola came. And he scored more goals, contributes more. He's captained the side. And even though people like him, dislike him, look at his stats. Look at his stats, they speak for themselves. That's somebody who is objectively made better, and he was unfancied at the start. But now the guy has played more games for Pep than Lionel Messi. So what does that say about, say, what he can do to players who maybe people think maybe weren't good enough? Mm. That's just my opinion.
There's no question that there's been a profound growth. One last thing I want to get you on, just because we're mindful we've taken up so much of your time, but this is Pep-related, and it's political, so just to warn you there. But what I find really interesting, and I'm wondering if you're seeing this, just going back to your experience as a player, about people speaking out about social issues. So obviously last mm-hmm. summer, you know, we had the Black Lives Matter protests, and it's continued with the kneel downs in England and whatnot. We saw this past weekend, we saw players wearing T-shirts about human rights, which, even though none of them explicitly said it, are Qatar related. We've seen, and I find this remarkable, you see the hoodie that Pep Guardiola has been wearing? It says open arms on the front.
Yeah.
I find it remarkable that nobody in this country, like the Daily Mail or whatever, pointed out what that's about.
No, I think there was a bit about the charity.
But there's been no backlash. So Open Arms is a charity that they have ships, and they basically rescue migrants who come on boats from North Africa and make sure that they help them cross safely and can claim asylum. You know, in the current climate, especially here in England, where Jules and I live as guests, with some people, that's not a very popular idea. Do you feel that footballers and managers feel a little more empowered to speak out about issues as opposed to staying in their lane?
I think it depends on the manager, depends on the nature of the person. Maybe for someone like Pep as a foreigner within England, it's easier for him to address certain issues like that. But you're right, it's like the sense of it. I'll be honest, say for example, I've seen your show where you were talking about what Zlatan said about LeBron James, and I thought he completely missed the point by a country mile. That was my opinion on the matter. Because I think as players and people who have a platform, you can represent a lot of other people who maybe don't have the chance to be heard or represented at all. So I think there is a sense of, like, I appreciate being on this show because whatever we talk about, thousands of people listen to. If I wasn't on this show, maybe thousands of people wouldn't hear. But there's stories to be told.
Hundreds of thousands.
Opinions to be shared.
Hundreds of thousands.
Millions, millions, millions of people, millions of downloads. And for someone like Pep, I think he's comfortable in his own skin understanding that the repercussions for doing what you believe to be the right thing don't matter the same as doing the right, making sure you do stick to your beliefs and stick for the right thing. And I think the mentality of trying to help as many people as possible and more people as possible, like I'm with it, and lots of players are with it, lots of managers are with it. But it is a tricky one because as far as political divides go, most of the world now is exactly split in half. And when it's like that, no matter what you do, you'll always upset somebody. But Pep has that belief. He's prepared to show it. And it shows the confidence that he has in himself, in the people who he works for, because ultimately City could tell him to stop doing it. But that shows the club buys into that to some level as well. And like, as I say, it's been an interesting year. It's been a very, very interesting year. But I think I would stop short of the Laura Ingram thing where it says show up and dribble. I'll stop short of the Zlatan thing where it says focus on this. No, because at the end of the day, sport is sport, but the real world is bigger than sport. And I think to completely turn your back on it because you're being tasked with, say, just kicking a ball around or managing a team, I think it misses the point. And then to also add to it, when Zlatan said that stuff, I thought to myself, well, whichever way you want to look at it, in America, LeBron James has the right to vote. So he has the right to a political opinion. And if he can't share that political opinion, why should anybody? And why should he lose it just now because other people watch him doing something else? So yeah, I'm happy that Pep is making a stance and trying to help out people who he believes need help. Because for too long, some of the voices which, you know, essentially remain silent, they've wanted and needed to be heard. So for me, I'm with it. And it's another reason why Pep Guardiola is probably the only manager that could get me out of retirement.
Nedim, it's been an absolute pressure too, because we had to live up to your high expectations of us. So, but it's been a pleasure.
An honor, honestly.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough, Nedim. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Cristiano Ronaldo thought he had scored an injury time winner and that Portugal had beaten Serbia 3-2. Jules, he was wrong. No VAR, no goal line technology. The official simply didn't realize his shot had crossed the line before it was cleared. Why are we living with this 11 years after Frank Lampard's goal against Germany in South Africa?
Because people need to know that VAR technology, but also goal line technology, is very expensive. And if you do it for the World Cup qualifiers in Europe, for example, you can't just do it only in big countries. You'll have to do everywhere, which means you do it in Luxembourg when they're home, you do it in Georgia when they're home, you do it in Serbia when they're home against Portugal. You have to do it everywhere. You can't just pick... Oh, yeah, let's just do it for...
Well, first of all, you can, because that's exactly what they did in the FA Cup a few years ago.
It's not because the FA Cup has done it that they have to do it for the World Cup qualifiers. This was stupid in the first place from the FA anyway.
But I think it's stupid not to do it, because... But
it has to be fair for everyone, Gab. People can benefit from it and not others. Okay, so the goal from Portugal is given. Cristiano is happy. They win 3-2, right?
Right.
And then in the same group, in a game that doesn't have VAR or goal line technology, that happens to another team, and they don't get that goal, and they just get 1 point instead of three, and they don't go to the World Cup after that.
So
what are you going to say?
First of all, you do realize that that stadium, the legendary Maracanã, the original Maracanã, they are set up for VAR in that stadium.
But it's not about who can do it or not. It's the fairness.
Okay, there are 55 UEFA member nations, right? Of those, more than two-thirds have at least one stadium that is VAR, VAR enabled.
Yeah.
Leaving aside the fact that it wouldn't cost that much to do the other ones, but I get it, there's a pandemic, they want to spend their money elsewhere, that's fine. I really don't understand why it would be unfair, since the conditions would be the same for both teams on the pitch.
But not all the teams in the same group, Gab. You can't say that. You can't have it for Serbia, Portugal, and the other group, in the other game in that group, don't have it.
Okay. Azerbaijan is in that group, right? And I think they are in the group, although they probably do have VAR actually, because it's Baku and they've hosted Europa League finals. But whatever crummy team, there's one other crummy team in the book. I'm forgetting which one. If they don't have VAR, right? If they're not VAR enabled, all that happens is that every single team that plays there won't get to play with VAR, right? And the home team won't get to play with VAR. In the context of one match, the conditions are exactly the same.
But not at all. They'll have three home games with no VAR. The other teams have only one game to play in that stadium. So why would you play three games without VAR and the other team is just one?
But because at least you're getting some level of fairness.
What fairness? There's no fairness in that. It's either you do it for everybody, every game, in
VAR
every group.
VAR doesn't give one side or another the advantage.
But it doesn't matter. What if in your game where you don't have VAR, something like this happened, what happened to Cristiano, and you don't get the win, you don't get the 3 points, you don't go to the World Cup because on that day there was no VAR?
Then spend on VAR. What do you want me to tell you?
It's either you do it for everyone or not. And if you stick with the football, and that game, Gab, by the way, Ronaldo had a really poor game, and Portugal, who were 2-0 up after the Diogo Jota's brace, squandered that two-goal lead and drew 2-2.
Yeah, so first of all, Serbia are a legit talented team. And Serbia, in the second half, they came out and they absolutely hammered Portugal. Cristiano didn't have a good game. I think there's one lesson we're learning. We probably knew this already. Cristiano is at his best when he plays with a center forward. There was no André Silva. I don't know if you can tell me, I can't cram André Silva, his brother Bernardo, Bruno Fernandes, and Diogo Jota in the same team.
And Cristiano, yeah.
And Cristiano, okay, fine. But if you want to have Cristiano out there, have him with somebody who can give you that depth, who can run behind play off him.
Yeah.
Ousmane Dembélé is back on the score sheet as France beat Kazakhstan 2-0. It's a bit of celebration with Kazakhstan.
I'm happy.
Jules, par for the course though, right?
Yeah, I mean, can you believe that he hadn't scored since June 2018 for the national team and hadn't played anyway for 2.5 years?
Probably explains why he didn't score.
Yeah, but after winning the World Cup, he's good. He's back at his best level, whether he plays as a wide player or as a second striker, whatever, like he does with Barcelona. And that goal was very important because France, you know, they won. They didn't play.
And
great,
on the second goal, if you notice, it was Pogba's hair and that weird thing he was wearing on his
sleeve.
The weird sleeve.
What do you mean the weird?
Forced the defender who was marking him to cause an own goal. So I think Pogba should get credit for that.
Yeah, almost an assist. And that defender, by the way, you have to feel for him for the own goal. But just before, he produced an incredible clearance to prevent Martial from scoring. Harry Kane scores one and sets up another as England beat Albania 2-0 away from home. Gab, Kane said that he would think about his future after the Euros. Should Spurs fan be worried? Right, so I think they should.
All right, so first of all, I thought England showed a lot of maturity in this game. Albania, managed by Edi Rea, Fabio Capello's best friend in the universe. Yeah. You know, they clogged the spaces, created issues for them, and then Harry Kane resolved them. So
first half hour was a bit slow until they were patient, tactics, right?
And then, yeah, it was a bit of that, and a bit, Albania just got tired. Secondly, I'm so bored with this story. What's Kane supposed to say? No, I've decided my future. I'm going to stay here for eternity.
I've got 3 more years left on my contract. That's all I care about.
Whatever, man. He's not sending messages. He's not. You shouldn't worry about this. He's going to make up his mind to move or to stay. I hope he stays. I think he'll stay. And I think that's all, because I think it means more to do something at Spurs. And the people, as you know, the people I would crush if I could, I would get violent with them with a sledgehammer. Other people say, no, oh, Kane's not showing ambition. He wants to win things. I'm sorry. Winning a smidge at Spurs is worth a lot more than going and winning things at Bayern Munich
what
or Juventus
win anything
or Manchester
for Spurs?
United.
And
so
he could have gone to another club and win.
So what? He'll be Alan Shearer. I'm sure he did win something. But you know what I mean? Like, it matters more.
Yeah.
Belgium are held to a 1-1 draw by the Czech Republic, for whom Tomáš Souček does not score.
No.
Jules, is this a big deal?
It's a big deal because they should have lost the game.
No, I was talking about Souček not scoring.
Oh, Souček not scoring. It is because
I'm kidding.
He had one chance in the first half and another bigger chance in the second half.
Enough with the Souček analysis.
No,
let's talk about
true.
Belgium.
Alderweireld had a goal line clearance on the Souček header. That could have been another goal for him. I have to say, I'm a bit worried about Belgium. I'm not sure about that back three, I have to be honest. I don't think they played well. I'm very worried about the lack of partnership between Lukaku and De Bruyne. Apart from the goal, that's pretty much the only time where De Bruyne can find Lukaku in a game like this. So at least they didn't lose, because they didn't play well at all.
If you're going to play the back three in that style of play, I wonder about maybe you move Tielemans or Dendonker into the middle of the back
three. Dendonker plays back three with Wolves sometimes, so... Italy win against Bulgaria 2-0, but Gab, he wasn't really impressive, was it?
No, but they scored 2 goals, which is more than before when they only won 1-0 and were impressive. Look, they're rotating teams. It's 3 games in 8 days.
Yeah.
You just want to get the wins under your belt and move on. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Germany went away to Romania 1-0 thanks to a Serge Gnabry goal, though a Leroy Sané error at the very end nearly cost them 2 points. Jules, your thoughts?
I thought they were very good, Gab. I think they should have scored far more goals. They had many chances. In the end, you're right, it could have even been a draw, which would have been a complete smash and grab for Romania. But that was good. I liked what I saw. Exactly the same team that the previous games where they won 2-0, and they were also, I thought, quite convincing. Romania are not very good, so you know you need to wait a bit, I think. But certainly there's something there.
Kimmich, Goretzka, Gundogan midfield, pretty tasty.
Yeah, and Gnabry, 15 goals in 19 caps, which is,
just let him play
up front. Continues like this, pretty impressive. Norway, Germany, and now Holland. 3 different national teams take the pitch wearing T-shirts asking for human rights. FIFA has said that it won't take action because the messaging isn't political. And England said they're considering it too, Gab. Will this lead anywhere? I mean, it refers to Qatar 2022, of course.
It does. And now people are saying, oh, should we boycott the Qatar World Cup? I mean, guys.
Should have done it 10 years ago. No,
12 years ago.
12 years ago.
When this was assigned, if you feel so strongly about it. I think you can never shine the spotlight enough on human rights. Obviously, it's not just a Qatari issue. The damage has been done. Qatar has adopted new laws. I think the focus should be on monitoring to make sure that these new laws are being implemented. Mm. They're working with organizations to do that. But beyond that, I'd love to see footballers taking a stand about this when they go back to their club sides, especially the ones whose clubs, you know, take money from Qatar. You know, to what point?
Yeah.
To what point do you want to push it? Beyond that, I'd love it in a perfect world if governments took action and then made these decisions. But yeah. It's far more complex. But as far as re-emphasizing the issue of human rights, I'm all for it. Yeah, I think it can only be a good thing.
Completely.
Sweden beat Kosovo 3-0. But Jules, I know you'd rather just talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic's return. He says he has ninja moves.
Well, yeah, and if you see the first goal, his assist is like a sort of backheel volley kind of thing where you see how supple he is, the muscles in his leg, and etc. 3 assists in 2 games now, because he gave two this time, one the one before for his return.
Yeah, against Kosovo and against the
Doesn't matter, he played up front with Isak, you know, the old one and the young one.
No, I thought they did really well. But yes,
old and young. Not size. And I thought, you know, this is good. This is good for Sweden. This is good for football. I'm all for him.
I think Milan would love it if he took a break in the third.
Yeah, no, I know. But that's not going to happen. After losing to Turkey, Holland turned it around, beating Latvia 2-0. Are you going to be nice to Frank de Boer now, Gab? Or would you rather talk again about how much Stéphanie Frappart, the French referee, made history?
So the answer to this question was probably originally directed at you.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mean to Frank de Boer.
No, it's Latvia. I could have played for Latvia.
Look, it was important to go and get the 3 points, settle things down. Stéphanie Frappart happens to be a woman who happens to be a referee.
And this is a good one.
We want to get to the point where it becomes normal.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, some of you say, oh, you're being ageist because Mike Dean turns 52 and he's still refereeing. I suspect we'll talk about Mike Dean later.
Yeah.
I don't care. I just want people who are good.
Exactly.
Jose Mourinho has helpfully pointed out that we don't expect to discuss rocket science with the folks at NASA, but, quote, people think they can discuss football with one of the most important managers in the game, Pep Guardiola. No, he's talking about himself, obviously.
Is he?
Jules, it's pretty much exactly what you'd expect.
Yeah, of course. You know, don't come to me with debate, responsibility, how bad my team is playing, because you know nothing about football, because you're not a great manager like I am.
Yeah, I just want to say, I want to give a serious answer to this as well.
I don't.
You know what? Everybody has played football at some level. Many people have managed football at some level, even if it's just kids. The difference between this and what Mourinho does is Mourinho has more complex inputs.
Yeah.
The process, though, is the same, and Mourinho's better at managing those complex inputs. I have never flown a rocket ship.
Haven't you?
I haven't designed one. Shaka probably has.
Yeah.
But this is why it's such a stupid analogy. Let's move on. It is stupid.
Martin Odegaard and Erling Haaland had us all jumping on the Norway bandwagon. But Gab, do we need to reconsider now that they got spanked at home by Turkey 3-0? And they were bad.
We need to reconsider. They were bad. Some of the defending was terrible. It was fun being on the show with Jan, having a go at the defender.
He said, we can't defend. I mean, they've got Christopher Ayer, the tallest right back ever.
Did you see how close the guy got Sayuncu? Look, can I say something else? Turkey are good.
They're good.
Turkey are a good team with a veteran manager who knows what he's doing. So respect to Turkey, please.
Yeah.
Sticking with Odegaard and Haaland, reports in Spain say that Real Madrid have put a 55 million euro price tag on Odegaard, and ESPN's Stefan Ursfeld and others reporting that Borussia Dortmund want 180 million for Haaland. Do these numbers seem right, or is it just like me saying, hey, you want to buy my old refrigerator? I'll sell it to you for $50,000.
You know, how good is your old refrigerator?
It's probably not as good as Haaland.
I've got no problem with 55 for Odegaard. I think that's probably his price value. I've got no problem with Erling Haaland for 180 million, knowing that in a year time he would be worth 75, because that's when the release clause kicks in. So if someone wants to pay that and have that money, go. I think they're very talented players. I don't think you spend over if you spend that kind of money.
No. Like, we've been through this. I think we both think Haaland's going to stay at least for another year, provided they make the Champions
League. Odegaard will go back to...
And I think Odegaard's going to come back because the pathway is clear for him at Real Madrid. And that's what should happen.
Yeah, exactly. Let's roll with the under-21s now. As you know, it's the first half of the Euros. Italy can qualify for the knockout rounds if they beat Slovenia and if Spain also beat the Czech Republic. But God, they've had some disciplinary issues. Is it 3 red cards in 2 games?
No, Jules, it's not 3 red cards in 2 games. It's 4 red cards in 2 games. 4 red cards. Listen, they played all right against Spain, and Spain are talented. There's no excuse. Four red cards in two games. If they continue at this pace, they won't have any players left.
Tonali, Scamacca. So it's not even if they were rubbish players coming
Rovella,
off the bench.
Who was outstanding Rovella. In Spain. The idiot goes and he goes to headbutt Mingesa and then he throws himself to the ground.
You're not going to qualify now and I can make fun of you on Thursday.
Jules, we spent years praising England for how they've turned around their youth development and now producing tons of young talent. So why, after two defeats, is the under-21 side on the brink of elimination?
Because the manager is Eddie Boothroyd. Do you remember him?
Yes.
No, because he was rubbish as a manager at club level anyway.
Come on.
Yeah,
well, wonderful football.
It's dreadful. The football is dreadful. He's a dreadful manager. The team selection is dreadful. They've got so much talent in that England under-21 team. So much talent. And yet he's wasting it. He's ruining it. It makes me mad watching them play. It makes me mad.
He's one of those guys who gets stereotyped for playing long ball, agricultural football, blah, 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 which is totally out of keeping with the way English clubs play today. I don't understand why he just seemed out of step with the rest of the FA. That's all I'm saying.
Just don't have him there. Please get rid of him. Reports in Italy saying that Juventus are trying to cash in on Aaron Ramsey, who is 30 and has 3 years left on his current contract. Supposedly, there's interest from Liverpool, Everton, and even Spurs, Gab.
Yeah, I don't know who's putting this. Look, Aaron Ramsey is on an enormous contract.
How much is he earning? Something like 400?
It's not 400K a week. Some Muppet reported that. And everybody
300? Even that is a lot of money.
It's about £250,000 a week, if you think in pounds. It's way too much money for a guy who's injured all the time. He's missed half the starts for Juventus, and he hasn't been that good when he's played. So I think this is all nonsense. I think they might be in a situation where they give him away, but I certainly don't see them making any money back, and I certainly hope he never plays for Spurs. You don't want to go down the Sol Campbell Judas route, do you?
Definitely not.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
The Athletic reports that Liverpool are closing in on Leipzig's Ibrahima Konate, you haven't said it yet, but I'm sure is another Paris boy like you.
He is, actually.
Funny that. They're willing to pay his 40 million release clause. Jules, in my humble opinion, he's not even the best French central defender at the club.
Well,
but
some would say that if he hadn't been injured so much, he would have been better than Dayot Upamecano.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
Anton Wheel should be a bicycle.
Right by where my grandparents used to live. So, you see, in Voltaire, in the area of Voltaire in Paris. Incredible talent. If he can stay injury-free, no problem. I've got no issue with the 40 million release clause. I even think for someone like him, he's a bargain again if he stays injury-free. So we'll have to see. I don't know what that means about Kabak and that loan becoming permanent. I know it's only 18 million, but can Liverpool sign them both?
If you're Konaté at this stage, I mean, assume Van Dijk and Gomez are going to be back and fully fit.
Yeah,
I mean, you're going to come in at number three, right? I mean, you can maybe challenge Joe Gomez and you're going to tell me he's better than Joe Gomez, but initially you'll be number three.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just wondering, might you be better off sticking another year? Upamecano's gone. You can really establish yourself as a leader at Leipzig and then move from a stronger position.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Liverpool still has a lot of money to pay Wolves for the Diogo Jota deal.
Yeah.
And that 40 million release clause has to be paid in full. Release clause, you can't have installment like you have on a normal transfer. You have to give the whole money straight in. So that's just something that...
I think somebody will be doing a deep dive on Liverpool's finances soon.
I hope they have the money. Raheem Sterling and Kevin De Bruyne are both out of contract in the summer 2023 and both want new deals at Manchester City. Gab, is this an unwanted headache for Pep Guardiola?
Well, we foreshadowed this a little bit. We spoke about it earlier with
Nathan,
I think we're on the same page. It's not a headache because as tremendous as these players are, Guardiola's created this weird environment. I mean, weird in a good way, almost unprecedented at this level, where neither of these guys are essential. Neither of these guys are Harry Kane at Spurs. Neither of these guys, you go there and you say, oh my God, if we lose him, you know, let's pay him what we need.
No, but you have to replace them if you lose them.
The
investment of replacing a Kevin De Bruyne and going to get a player as good as him or a similar profile will cost you far more than extending his deal, right?
it depends how much of a bump he wants, and it depends how many more years he wants. I think what we've seen is that neither of these players, nobody at City, is indispensable, and I think this puts you in a pretty luxurious position. You can go to them and say, "Hey, you want to continue being here? You know, I mean, Sterling's a bit younger, but you know, you have a lot of leverage there. You don't need to tie yourself down to an enormous contract." So, yeah. I think it's a pretty good situation for City to be in.
I agree.
Now, we don't often celebrate the Luxembourg national team, but Jules, I'll imagine you'll want to after they beat the Republic of Ireland 1-0.
Incredible. Maybe their best result ever, you know, although
they won at least one game a year. They won a game last. They beat Azerbaijan last year.
No, they beat Montenegro. They beat Cyprus as well in the Nations League.
They lost
group.
To Liechtenstein in a friendly.
I know, but it was a friendly. But in the Nations League, they've certainly made a lot of progress. You know, they're cousins to us, of course. So we've played them. They drew 0-0. I remember a game in Toulouse. In a qualifier as well between France and Luxembourg, and they went there and got a 0-0 draw. You should have seen them celebrating in their dressing room. It was incredible. So well done to them. They keep improving. The progress is there. And that's a good thing. And you know what? I believe these kind of results, it's also on the back of the Nations League and how more competitive maybe a team comes by playing teams of their level instead of getting thrashed 5-0 every time.
I go back to this. Nations League, I think, is one of the best inventions
we've
seen
in football.
It's
been really positive, for sure. But for Ireland, man, I mean, come on, please. Gigi Buffon reportedly will quit if he doesn't get regular playing time, either at Juve or somewhere else. Does that make sense to you, Gab? And I thought he was going to sign a one-year extension at Juve.
I think he's realizing that. Oh, I mean, I think he already knew that he was going to be number two, and that was part of the deal. He was going to get a certain number of appearances. I think the dude wants to play. It's, you know, at the back, you know, you hear that clock ticking near, you know, time's winged foot traveling near or whatever, Neandre Marvell.
But why would you, where would he go? There's no big clubs who get him, right?
He doesn't need to go to a big club.
But why would you go to like a Genoa or a team like this where you're going to finish 11th and 12th?
Just so you can, what do you care if you finish 11th or you've won it? Dude, you're a world champion. I mean,
I know, but like, where's the fun if you lose 3-0 or if you play for relegation?
I would imagine it's more fun than sitting on the bench and watching Wojciech Szczesny play every week.
He wants to beat all those records. That's why he wants to play so much, be the, you know, the one playing
at 43
or something.
Got no problem with it.
I don't know. He has to make sure that club he chooses, that's for sure.
Argentina's Guido Rodriguez, who plays for Betis, of course, is heavily linked with Arsenal in the Spanish media. Now, he's a defensive midfielder. It's a big price tag, $75 million. Does this make sense at all, or is this all Spanish paper talk?
Surely they don't have that money to spend on one player. I don't believe it. Not after the Pepe deal, not after the Partey deal, not in the pandemic and seeing how much money they're losing.
I think this is not making. I could be wrong, right? But I think this has got to be entirely a paper contract.
Completely, yeah. I mean, he's doing well with Betis and Pellegrini and all of that, but this is surely not. For me, this cannot happen.
Maybe it's a way to scare Granit Xhaka?
Yeah, maybe.
And Mohamed Elneny?
Brazil's Serie A is introducing new rules whereby clubs can only change managers once per season. I mean, I love this story. Gab, no more merry-go-round.
Yeah,
what's not to like about changing managers 3 or 4 times a year?
So there's two reasons for this. So here in England, and different leagues have different rules. Basically, when a manager gets sacked, there's always like a payout. In other leagues, like in Italy, what happens is they can't agree the payout. So essentially, they keep paying the manager.
On gardening leave, yeah.
Gardening leave, hoping that he'll just give up the rest of his contract when he gets offered another job. I mean, it's so stupid. Somebody told me Santos had 7 managers under contract.
That's not possible.
I don't know. I mean, I know Genoa had 5, I think, at one point that they were paying. Hey, why not? The only thing that gets me is it's so easy to get around this rule. So easy that, you know, you just tell.
Like how?
How? Okay, so I've appointed Arturo and I've appointed Zhao and I don't like either one. And then I want to go and appoint Zico. And I say, hey, Zico, you come here. You sit at the end of the bench and, you know, your official title is going to be team photographer. But you're going to pick the team and you're going to run. I mean, come on.
God.
A million ways to get around it. Thierry Henry has decided to step away from social media. Jules, what's this all about?
Yes, he wanted to make a stand and decided to just finish his Twitter account. And not as a reaction to something that's happened to him on his account, but just for Twitter to do more. He thinks that Twitter and other social media networks are not doing enough to fight against racial abuse, racism on the social media, that more should be done. And for him, the idea that he had was to do this. He had, I think, 2.3 or 4 million followers before he closed his account. And on Saturday morning, you could see Thierry Henry doesn't exist. That was the if you look for his profile and his account, that was it. And I like the fact that Arsenal supported him by publishing on their social media that photo of Thierry's account not existing anymore.
Did Arsenal delete their account too?
They didn't, but that I think that support went far.
You got to do what you're comfortable with. This can be an effective boycott. I think it's more effective if a group of people do it.
Yeah, for sure. But maybe that's the start. Maybe it's starting it. We'll see. The United States beat Northern Ireland 2-1 in a friendly. Meanwhile, the U.S. Olympic team lost to Honduras 2-1, which means that they won't be going to the Olympics for the third Olympic Games in a row. So this is not accident, Gab. Some are suggesting that they should maybe have sent some of their young, very talented players who were with the A team to make sure that they qualify for the Olympics.
Yeah, look, it's hindsight, right? I mean, the reality is you're in the United States, you should be beating Honduras without, you know, Reyna and these other dudes.
Yunus Musa.
On the other hand, the Olympics are important for football in the U.S. This isn't like European nations, right? This is really, really bad. You can't go. And why you wouldn't put yourself in a situation where you can go and win something important with your national team, which, Gold Cup aside, you've never done.
Yeah.
This is a really, really big blow. And, you know, the rules and the standards that apply in Europe, like, oh, who cares about the Olympic team? I mean, as you know, I was always shocked by the fact that they didn't even have an Olympic team in this country because of, you know, they like to pretend that they're four different nations and so they can have four FAs and four seats on the board. But then the Olympics, it's just one country,
just GB team, yeah.
Which doesn't make sense either because GB is not the country. The team is UK, the country's UK, but whatever. Don't get me started
on that. Yeah, I don't
understand. Yeah, I think I think somebody really, really dropped the ball on this one. And I think it's actually going to be very, very damaging. Now, you might say the Olympics, by the way, they're in August, right?
Yep.
So if you'd sent Gio Reyna to the Olympics, you know, plus some good overage players, it's something you could have negotiated with his club, right? It wouldn't have been the end of the world.
Yeah, a few players.
So you could have actually put a really competitive team out there.
Is it time to maybe rethink the structure of youth football in the U.S. and maybe have a more... And I know you're going to say this is a debate that's been going on for years, but now it's three Olympics in a row. The Olympic team is basically you under-21s and you allow three over-23 players in that squad. So that doesn't look good for youth football in the U.S., full stop.
I think they need to rethink their priorities. I'd be curious. I imagine Greg Berhalter is going to say something about this, the national team coach. I can see his point. He hasn't had a chance to work with his players at all because of the pandemic. So obviously he wants to have them together and play Northern Ireland. Equally, by the same token, you know, if the U.S. can send a strong Olympic team and do well in the Olympics, that strengthens his position as well. That said, from Greg Berhalter, I can also say, dudes, it's freaking Honduras. Yeah. Like, I don't want to disrespect Honduras. They've been to World Cups and stuff. But you expect the U.S. and Mexico to qualify every single time.
100%.
When either one doesn't, it's a serious systemic failure. Premier League referee Mike Dean is 52 years old, and we expected, or at least in my case, hoped that he would be retiring. He used to have age limits for referee, no more. Now there's suggestions he wants to come back for the 2021-22 season.
Yeah, but no. Please, no, just stay home. Go and
give
support
somebody
your
else
team,
a chance.
Oldham or Altrincham or Macclesfield, whoever.
Honestly, it's so tiresome.
Just let someone. Please, I beg you. Please, don't come back. Switzerland beat Lithuania 1-0 on Sunday in their World Cup qualifier. But Gab, why was the match delayed for like 15 or 20 minutes?
I absolutely love this story. One of the goals was too big in the sense that it was too high, about 10 centimeters or 4 inches too high. I don't understand.
What, they brought the wrong one in?
I don't know. I have so many questions. Why would you own a gigantic goal? For what reason? Was it a question that you couldn't fit it into the holes?
Surely.
I never want to hear about Swiss precision, Swiss trains running on time,
watches,
Swiss chocolate, Swiss banks. Enough
watches,
of this.
Watches.
Small bastard. Anyway, that brings us to an end. But hey, come back on Thursday?
Yeah.
It's all over again?
Yeah.
All right. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.